but it'd be wrong to say every position's up for grabs. Like,
I know Henry's won this race a few times, but I haven't, and that's just an incredible race to win. Yeah,
no fear at all, because the boss is the boss.
Winning Rossmann was never even on my radar.
Whoever dreamt anyone was going to get to 100 winners? It was just something that was unachievable.
We stood up, we showed our character like we do in every single game.
This is Sports Beat Extra on Beat.
I'm Adrian Johnson, and welcome to this week's Sports Beat Extra. Coming up on today's show, I'll be joined by Wexford FC's new manager Stephen Elliott to take a look at what his aims are for the club in the upcoming season and much more. And we'll reveal the winner of this month's Club Focus. But first, I sat down with Irish Women's Rugby Player of the Year and Wexford native Aoife Wafer to unpack the monumental year the Irish Women's Rugby team have enjoyed.
Sports Beat Extra.
Beat 102-103.
Wexford's Aoife Wafer has been making waves on the provincial and international stage with Leinster in Ireland. In a year that saw the Irish women's rugby team jump from the third tier WXV3 all the way to the first tier WXV1, to beating the world champions New Zealand, to gaining qualification to the Rugby World Cup next year, it's almost impossible to know where to start when speaking to the Ballygarrett native. But winning the WXV3 seems like a good place to begin.
Ireland claim the WXV3 title. The comeback is complete. They had a mountain to climb at half time, but scale it they have.
It can't be understated, though, how monumental sort of where the Irish women's rugby team is at now compared to where they were at the beginning of the year. Like, I mean, looking back at it yourself, like, and, you know, you can factor in the individual awards and the team awards as well. But is this something that you ever even imagined kind of going into the beginning of the year?
I think us as a team really believed it. Like, I know people from the outside kind of looked at us and we were playing in WXV1, sure, like, it's about a year ago now, and we were playing Kazakhstan and Colombia and Spain out in Dubai, and like everyone was kind of like, I don't know how this Six Nations is going to go. And then we get into a Six Nations, we come third, we get straight away qualified for the World Cup, and everyone's like, oh God, they're going into WXV1 against the very best in the world. How is this going to work? Because they've literally just been playing Kazakhstan before the Six Nations. So, like, I think we always believed as a team that we could do it, because the kind of culture is all changed by, like, Sean Ryan came in and he changed everything around our environment. And then, like, we've had a brilliant coaching staff come in and they've changed the way we've played and they've made it suit us. So if somebody has a super strength that is carrying a ball, then they make sure to try get that person on the ball. If someone has a super strength of kicking, then they let that person try kick. So they've developed a game plan that suits our individual talents and then brings it together to suit us as a team. And yeah, like, I think it's worked wonders this year. And yeah, like, going from playing in WXV3 to coming second in WXV1 in the space of a year is absolutely ridiculous. But I think we always had that belief to be able to go and compete with the best in the world and to be hard to play against and to be hard to cope with as other teams. So yeah, like, we always knew we could do it, but it was just a matter of time of when we'd do it.
Yeah, I mean, speaking on going from WXV3 to XV1, I mean, it's such a massive, like, jump in such a short space of time, and you speak about the team having this sort of belief and passion that they can compete with the best in the world. But is there an element of mentality that needs to shift in order to be able to compete at that high level?
Oh, definitely. Like, you take it, last year in 2023 in the Six Nations, Ireland came last. Like, we, I think, scored altogether maybe 2 tries. We got very well bet by everyone. And like, it was a really hard year. And then I suppose you go to Dubai, having lost the Six Nations and having been hammered by everybody. Like, I think it's something that we needed at that time, because as a group, it was like, okay, we can score and we can win games. And then we played Spain, and obviously it was a closer game and it was more of a challenge. And that was our final to try win WXV3, and we won it. And it was that thing of, okay, we can come from behind to win a game and we can close out and win ugly. So then that all builds momentum, I suppose. And yeah, like, it does change your mindset, because then now you're going into Six Nations, you've just won 3 games, you've scored a rake load of tries, and on the way through you've also made some new caps and new people have joined the squad, and then as well, like, this new coaching staff and new culture lead have all joined and made their impacts. So I think, yeah, it all builds momentum, and then we just wanted to bring that green wave into the Six Nations and make it really hard to play against Ireland and really hard for other teams to come to our shores and play against us in Ireland.
10 years ago, Ireland pulled off one of the great rugby upsets, and now a new generation of Irish stars have done the same.
I mean, you can't not talk about the last year and sort of forget the New Zealand match. I think that's the time when women's Irish rugby kind of broke out into the mainstream cultural zeitgeist in Ireland. Everyone was talking about it. I mean, going up against the World Cup champions and then to come out, not only to compete and, you know, put it up to them, but then to come out and win. Walk me through what was kind of going through your mind going into that game before stepping out onto the pitch, because regardless, I know you say that belief and that mental change, there has to be an added element of pressure for you, not only you as an individual, but the team as a whole going up against New Zealand.
Yeah, like, I suppose we spoke a lot about belief versus awe during the week. So knowing and recognising that the Black Ferns are the best, like one of the best in the world, and they're current world champions, and sort of acknowledging that, but also being like, okay, like, they are normal people. And like, yes, they might have this absolute aura around them, and they're brilliant people and brilliant sports people, but like, there's that belief that we still can do this, and we still do have game plans to be able to do this. So I think that week before the game, like, I don't think anyone's been as clear on a game plan going into that as what we were. Like, we had developed a strategy that we knew would work, and it was just a matter of executing it on the day. So when it came to actually playing the game, like, once we sang the anthem and obviously the Black Ferns had their haka and we marched forward, and everyone was like, yeah, let's go. Like, everyone was pretty G'd up. Like, and yeah, like, I'm getting goosebumps even thinking about it, because like, it was just such a special day. And like, it was something that I said it after the game, like, I've dreamed of that since I was a kid.
Denna O'Brien for the lead for Ireland. She has gone off and over.
Describe to me what goes through your mind when you see that final conversion go over the bar. I mean, it's one of those moments. I mean, it's without a doubt probably probably the most historic moment for women's rugby in Ireland, but alongside that, one of the biggest moments in Irish rugby in general as well.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, like, we scored the try and I was like, oh my god, we've just gone ahead. And like, I was like completely unaware of what the score was. I didn't even realise that Dan had to slot the conversion. And then what was it, we gave her the ball, and geez, like, fair play to her, because the amount of pressure that she must have had on her shoulders is absolutely ridiculous. But Dana is such a cool, calm, collected kind of person that, like, I'd say it probably didn't even faze her. Like, she has her kind of procedure of how to go through things, and she has her setup that she always follows. So yeah, like, fair play to her for slotting that. And it wasn't even an easy conversion, like, it was out on the edge because we had scored out there. But yeah, like, it was crazy. And then obviously it wasn't even that the conversion went over and game was done. We still had a kickoff to kind of manage. So the kickoff obviously went short, and everyone was like, oh my god, we just have to get a scrum and we win this game. So like, I think even credit to all the forwards, and especially the front row, because New Zealand were coming for us. Like, they were kind of, if they didn't win that scrum, that was it for them, and they'd lost to Ireland, who were ranked, I think we were like 5 spots below them or something. And yeah, our forward pack just dealt with it, and Emily passed it to Dana, and Dana kicked it out again. So I think as soon as that ball went over the touchline, like, there was just that sense of pride and relief and just happiness, I guess, from knowing what our journey is and being a part of it and being part of such a historic day as well.
Sports Beat Extra.
Magnificent 7 goals in 7 successive games for Seamus Calvin.
In other South East news this week, the legendary Tipperary forward Seamus Callanan is set to join the Offaly senior hurling management team. The 2019 Hurler of the Year retired from inter-county hurling last year and will now link up with the faithful county's manager Johnny Kelly as the forwards coach for the 2025 season. And Kilkenny side James Stevens have turned to club legend Owen Larkin as they bid to make a quick return to the Kilkenny Senior Hurling Championship. Brian Cody has stepped down as the Villagers manager following their first ever relegation from the top flight. Larkin is set to take over as manager with Jackie Tyrrell also among the backroom team. Now, let's hear more from Ireland Women's Rugby Player of the Year, Aoife Wafer.
Sports Beat Extra.
If you could go back and speak to sort of the little girl growing up in Ballygarrett and Wexford, who would, you know, as you mentioned, dreams of playing against the Black Ferns, you know, not only having played against them, but being so instrumental in beating them, being named Irish Rugby Player of the Year, and then being on the dream team for the World Rugby Awards. Where do you even begin to start with what you'd even say to yourself?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. Like, I think I've been really lucky that my family, like my siblings and my parents, have always pushed me to be better. So I'd probably just start by saying dream big. Like, yeah, world is your oyster kind of job. Like, and like me even sitting here talking to you, like, I'm not done dreaming. I've plenty more goals and objectives that I want to tick off in my career, and not just for myself, but for my team as well. And like, I'm pretty sure if I get to tick off all of those things, then that little girl back in Ballygarrett will, her mouth be on the floor, like, and be like, I didn't even know this was possible. So yeah, I suppose, like, even when I started growing up, like, it's funny because I obviously started with the boys and I was six, and I didn't really know there was a women's team when I was six. And my mom quickly educated me on this, and we went to every game under the sun that she could bring me to, whether that be Leinster or Ireland or her own games. She started playing just to kind of show that she could play too. But like, when I first started, I wanted to play on the men's team because I didn't think there was a women's team. So to be able to be part of history now is, yeah, it's an incredibly special feeling.
Well, Aoife, it's been an absolute pleasure, and best of luck with everything in the future. I'm sure we'll probably talk to you again at some stage when you're World Player of the Year or something, Universal Player of the Year. I don't know, whatever stage, if there's any higher you can go, but it's been an absolute pleasure as always. Thank you so much.
Cheers. Thank you very much for having me.
Sports Beat Extra.
Crossing opportunity. Fabulous ball in. Big save. Big goal. Aaron Dobbs.
Now, earlier this week, it was announced that former Ireland international Stephen Elliott would be taking the reins as Wexford FC's new manager. I had the opportunity to pick his brains earlier this week on why he wanted the job and his plans for the team moving forward. You've kind of answered it already, but I'll kind of reiterate for people who maybe haven't heard the first interview you did at Wexford FC. What was it about you that drew you to the job opportunity in the club itself?
Obviously, you looked at the squad last season. There was a lot of good young players around the squad, and you could tell there was a good, it was a vibrant group. I knew Sean McHale there from St. Pat's. He was on loan there and he spoke very highly of the football club. So when the opportunity came up to speak with the club on taking over, yeah, I jumped at the chance.
Mm-hmm. And your predecessor, James Kelly, would have talked a lot about last season and the impact that having those loan players in, like Louis Temple and Divine Ishmala, put into the side. I know you yourself are kind of looking to prioritise the academy side of Wexford, but is there an element to your vision going forward that will utilise the transfer market coming up to the new season?
Listen, obviously we want our academy to be growing and to be getting stronger as we go on. There's obviously good players in there at the moment. Calum Harnett is probably a prime example that played a lot this year. A couple of lads went away as well through the season onto a so-called bigger club. So listen, we can't take our eyes off the academy. We need to keep improving that. And that's what, like, making the coaching better, making the standard of everything in the academy better from the top right up, and hopefully we can bring better local quality into the academy rather than them moving afar to thinking they're going to get better opportunities. So that's something we need to fix going forward at Wexford. Regarding the first team squad, listen, we need to be competitive, and we need to get the balance right in with young players and kind of senior players, but it's important that there's some good senior characters around the group to help these young lads kind of get good habits and grow with the football club. So it really excites me. Listen, there's no doubt the first team will be competitive. And as I said, if we can integrate some of our better young players along the way over the course of the next season or two and be successful while doing that, then it can only mean really good things for Wexford Football Club.
Yeah, and speaking on those senior players in the squad, obviously, I'll just kind of go back to it again, mentioning, obviously, you know, there's already the senior players in the club, like Ethan Boyle, obviously the captain, has been a massive figure over the last three seasons. Is there other factors as well, these senior player roles that you're looking to fill? Is that going to be external as well?
No, listen, again, I need to sit down and speak with all of last year's group, because, again, I need to be fair to speak to all the players that were here last year. There's a lot of players kind of out of contract at this time of the year in this division, so I need to see what the individual players' expectations are this year and where their heads at before I start kind of making any full decisions. But listen, I've got plans in my head where I want to go with the playing squad as well. So again, there'll be a lot of conversations had over the next week or two with obviously players that have been at Wexford and potential other players coming in and the academy players and the academy coaching staff. And we want to make sure there's an alignment all the way through the football club and make a massive improvement in the football club. Listen, it's going leaps and bounds in recent years, but I think we can make Wexford a bit of a football giant in the south, kind of east.
Mm-hmm. And then you probably will have been aware of some of the pressure that and some of the expectations from fans already, and no doubt you'll hear about it on Sunday at the fan forum. But is there a sense for you now going into this season, obviously having Wexford come off a very successful season of getting to the semi-finals of the FAI Cup and just missing out on the playoff final, is there a point for you that you're thinking this season we need to be pushing for promotion and that has to be the goal from the get-go?
No, the way I'm approaching this role is, listen, everybody wants to do well, but listen, I know the work myself and the staff that I'll be bringing into the club will leave, won't stop till we have everything that we need to do and it'll be done properly. And usually when that happens, success happens with that. So I'm really excited. Listen, regarding promotion and getting up into the top division, listen, of course that's our aim in time. Everybody's aim is to win games and go and move forward, and that's certainly this football club's aim. Regarding pressure is something that I put on myself on a daily basis to be better. So again, listen, there's going to be great high standards at this football club, where players that come in, players that are at the club already, are going to have to buy into this. And if we do all that together, then I really believe the future's massively bright for Wexford.
Mm-hmm. Last year, a lot of fans would have noticed that with the younger squad, there was obviously this big drive and to score goals, and it was one of the big parts of Wexford's early on season. And then in the latter half of the season, they became a much more solid defensive side. For you coming in as manager, is there an element of, say, your previous roles, obviously with St. Pat's, and then across your playing career as well? Is there a style of football that you're looking to kind of employ in your tenure?
Yeah, listen, everybody wants to play the beautiful game, the passing football, playing between the lines, and again, that's great, and that's that. Like most, I want to do. I want to kind of make sure that we play a style and an energy game that supporters coming to Ferry Carrick Park will be excited and will be on the edge of their seat. We want to create an atmosphere in the ground. We want to create an atmosphere kind of in the town as well. We want people to be speaking about the football club, and not just in Ferry Carrick, outside the club at different times as well. Regarding football style, listen, we'll analyse the team, what we have, the squad we have, and we'll analyse who are playing very closely as well. So every game we'll be fully prepared to have a plan to kind of implement our style on the opposition that we can beat them. And that's something that excites me, because I know the work that will be put in behind the scenes, and I've no doubt, as long as the players buy in, and if the players don't buy in, then they won't be our players, you know. So there has to be a buy-in there, and if there is a buy-in, then we will be successful.
Yeah, well, Stephen, that's brilliant. Thank you so much, and best of luck with the rest of the season. I know everyone will be watching it with a keen eye.
Thank you very much.
Tracking sport across the southeast.
Sports Beat Extra.
Stephen Elliott's appointment wasn't the only big news for soccer in the southeast this weekend, as Waterford FC have officially been awarded an SSE Airtricity Women's Premier Division licence ahead of the upcoming 2025 season. The news of Waterford's inclusion in the league now brings the total number of SSE Airtricity Women's Premier Division teams to 12. Up until this announcement, Wexford FC were the only club in the southeast to compete in the division.
Backing sport across the southeast, Beats Club Focus.
On this month's Club Focus, we took a trip out to Piltown All Inclusive to check out how the Kilkenny Club is making soccer accessible for everyone. I spoke with the two founders of the initiative, Mick and Amy, about what setting up the club has been like and what it means to the communities both in Piltown and the surrounding areas.
Both of you have kind of really been involved from this from the very start, and you know, we've heard a lot about the club and all, but this in particular, the all-inclusive aspect of it, it must have been some undertaking to get it under the way, was it?
It took a while. We put feelers out in June of 2021, yep. And it wasn't up and running until March 2022. Yeah, so
when
we
put out the feelers, there was a lot of people around that had to travel to get anything like this. There was nothing in the area for it, so there was a gap in the market to do push on with it. So we said we'd go ahead with it, and we got good numbers out of it. Like that, it took a while to get going, but it was worth it in the end.
Yeah.
What do you think was the most difficult aspect about setting something like this up? Because it's not your typical routine of setting up any other football club, is it?
I'd say probably getting volunteers on board. It was, and explaining as well to the community that we're actually not a football for all. It's more of an inclusive group where we're not in an official league. It's just a safe space to come down. Every second Saturday we run it for an hour, and it's just where they can come and have fun. They don't have to play football. We have skipping ropes there. We have hula hoops. But they enjoy it.
Yeah. We've heard actually a lot about, you know, it's not just Pilltown, but it's the surrounding counties and everything, and everyone is coming to get involved. I mean, it obviously means that there's, you know, there's a drive and a want for something like this, isn't there?
Yeah, that's it. Like getting it off the ground and getting the word out was kind of the start of it. But once we kind of got it out on Facebook and stuff like that, social media.
Yeah.
Like, it took off. Started slow, but once it kind of took off, then there was a lot of people coming, you know what I mean? So it is good.
And even actually after coming back in September, we've had an influx again. And when we asked where they heard it, was we were putting it on local community pages, so Carrick, Muncoin, Pilltown, and we got more people in from that as well.
So it's, you know, only since starting in 2022, it's fastly becoming pretty much a staple of those communities, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose as well, word of mouth. So they're going back and telling people they go to school with, and they, because there's not, I suppose, any other groups like this around, like a lot of groups. We have one nearby. It's a sports group, but it only runs up until the age of 12, whereas we're kind of taking five up. We have someone in their 30s here, you know, taking part. So, like I said, it's for all.
Yeah, like that, because it's all-inclusive. There's no league, there's no kind of, what would we say, like...
there's no pressure on them.
Pressure at all. It's just come down, have a laugh for an hour and socialise more so than anything like that. Like we said, with the skipping ropes and the hula hoops, they can run around and two girls pass us one day and we're pretending they're on horses. So once they're happy, once they're enjoying themselves, like that's what it's all about. Yeah. And if they can kick a ball in between,
absolutely,
happy days.
Yeah. There's something about setting up something like this as well for those that need it. Like, that must be extremely rewarding for both yourselves.
Absolutely. I think, like, one of the mothers was talking to me there this side of Christmas, and she said that her young fella, he wasn't really into football, we'll say, but come Christmas, everything he asked for was football jerseys, footballs and everything. So, like, that's one kid that we're after getting through to, like, so...
It's kind of after putting it into perspective they are actually getting something for it. We enjoy coming down here, but to know that they're enjoying it and they're coming back week after week and, like, that, buying their football jerseys, and they're really enjoying it.
Obviously, then I finally ask, a part of the club focus is that at the end of the 12 months, there's 12 clubs all entered into for a bursary of €2,000. How much would that mean to this club here?
Oh my God, absolutely. The club itself is in development for more pitches and that, but even for our little club, just getting equipment, things like that, we're looking at hopefully during the winter months securing an indoor space, so getting indoor equipment and things like that would be so beneficial towards us.
There'd be no cancellations then, like, when obviously we have an all-weather pitch, but if it's lashing rain and there's only so much you can do, you don't want to be bringing them down and getting anybody sick, but if we could secure an indoor place, then it would be massive for us.
Yeah.
If you'd like to see more about the club, you can check out what myself and Brian got up to over on our socials at Beat102103. And if you're looking to get involved with the club, be sure to shoot them a message over on Facebook at Pilltown Soccer Club.
Sports Beat Extra.
Beat 102-103.
That's all for this week's Sports Beat Extra. You can listen back on our website, beat102103.com/podcasts. Coming up next, the soundtrack to your Saturday night, Beat Anthems.